You're listening to Air Schooner, listening that moves you. Hosted by Stacy Waite and Scott Winter.
The day after his brother left the house for good, Marty Hansen picked out the smallest boy in his sixth grade class and waited until the boy was alone. He approached him, telling him that he'd found a dead dog decomposing in a far corner of the school's courtyard. The boy, who was new at the school and whose name Marty could not remember, stuffed his hands deep into his pockets, nearly to the elbows, and said, "So?" He was looking at a dandelion near his sneaker's toe. "So," Marty said, staring at the boy, "so I dare you to come over and have a look." The boy kept his eyes trained on the ground, his head tilted forward. Marty saw the cowlick in the boy's hair. Probably that morning his mother had tried to comb it down with a wet brush, Marty thought. "I knew you were a pussy. Jimmy DiNuzio told me so." Marty had seen the two hanging around. "Jimmy didn't say that." "Whatever," Marty said. He began to turn away. Before he'd taken two full steps, he heard the boy say, "Where is it?"
She's Stacy Waite.
And he's Scott Winter, and you just heard the opening to Eugene Cross's story, Rosaline, if you know what I mean, from his book, Fires of Our Choosing.
We're talking to writers today about unlikely heroes, those characters or people who inspire us who maybe aren't exactly ideal citizens. And if you're wondering what Cross's character, Marty Hansen, is going to do next, like I am, we're going to play you just a little bit more of that story so we can find out.
Marty led him to the southeast corner of the courtyard where two evergreens stood like sentries. He pointed to the base of one of the trees where the branches hung low and bare and darkened the ground. Dry pine needles were scattered everywhere. "Over there," Marty said. The boy walked slowly, waving his hand in front of him as though he was blind. Marty followed close behind, and by the time the boy realized there was no dog, it was too late. Marty already had him on the ground. He straddled his chest and pounded his head and torso with his fists. He had trapped one of the boy's hands with his knee, and when the boy tried to shield his face with the other, Marty tore it away. He dropped his bony elbows onto the boy's chest and ribs, and he spit on him until his mouth went dry. The boy's screams sounded to Marty like a car peeling out, like the high-pitched squeal of rubber on asphalt. Marty had picked the spot by the evergreens in part because of its distance from Miss Nepik, the recess proctor that week. By the time she arrived, the boy's screaming had withered down to quiet sobs, more a gasping for air and heaving of the chest than anything. After she pulled Marty off, grabbing him with both hands by his hair and yanking him to the side, he lay in the grass panting as she said the boy's name over and over. Marty stared at the cloudless sky and felt such a relief that he began to repeat it too. "Joshua," he said. "Joshua, Joshua, Joshua."
The story Cross reads from here was first published in American Short Fiction. Cross's work earned him a spot on the 2012 Best American Short Stories list of 100 Distinguished Stories. Cross's character, Marty, in Rosaline, if you know what I mean, is one of the reasons Don Shaun has said Cross's work shows an uncanny understanding of the human condition. From what we've heard, Marty Hansen is not the kind of character you might initially think you would learn from, but Stacy got the chance to talk to Cross about how Marty became a more complex character, a character Cross could understand with more compassion. And Stacy was fascinated by the way Cross suggested he really didn't know Marty at first, but through writing the story, he came to know him.
That was what I wondered about with Marty, is what would drive a kid, you know, a young kid, to do something like this, to hurt somebody else so badly? You know, as I was working on the story, I think I remember I got to page 4, page 5, and said, oh my God, his mother is completely absent from his life. I mean, she's there, but only as a sort of a shadow. And then I got to page 6 or 7 and said, oh, his father's died, and that was kind of the glue that held the family together. And you know, he died in this kind of really sad, traumatic way. You know, he was out running, and it was hit and run by a car. And the further I got into the story, the more I started to understand why a character like Marty would do something like he did at the beginning of the story to a character like Joshua, or why he would act out in that way. And that doesn't in any way excuse it, but at the same time, yeah, I started to get compassion for Marty, whereas I felt the same way beginning the story. I said, wow, this kid's a real asshole. But the further I got into the story, the more I started to understand why he might do something like he did. And I think as fiction writers, that's kind of our, you know, that's kind of our job in a way at times, is to sort of discover, you know, not just what our characters are doing, but what drives them to do that. What are their ultimate desires, you know? And Marty, in large part, just wants somebody to pay attention to him. His father's been killed. His mother's completely receded into herself. His brother has picked up and left, and he's completely alone in the world. And not only is he acting out in a violent way, but he's also saying, hey, I'm still here, you know, and he just wants somebody to notice him. It's an awful way to go about doing that. But at the same time, yeah, I kind of started to understand him better as well the further into the story I got. Bullies are scared, you know, and so they're trying to act out to show they're not scared, when really they are. And Marty really has been, you know, stripped of everything he's known, everything he's ever loved. And the way I think that comes forward in the story is later on he's sent to anger management classes, and one of their first exercises is to share with their partner something that they're proud of. And he just can't think of anything. It takes him a long time. Something that he's done, something that he's responsible for that was good. What he does come up with is that he taught his hamster how to fetch, and the girl that he's paired up with in class kind of immediately puts it down in a way, and you know, this sort of reinforces why he has become the kind of, you know, acting out personality that he is.
We've got another fiction writer on the show today who had some pretty interesting things to add to this conversation.
Peter Rock is the author of the novel My Abandonment, which won him the Alex Award from the American Library Association. He talked with Air Schooner correspondent Ryan Oberhelman about his sense of the unlikely hero.
I feel like a real storytelling has to account for people doing things that are kind of evil, or, you know, or they really hurt other people, but trying to understand their thought process or their reckoning of that. Like, are there things they can't control? Are there other things at stake? Like, do they not understand what's going on? You know, what are their failures? On the one hand, you have sort of classical heroes who, you know, they usually have some kind of tragic flaw, and it's sort of these people who are heroic and who are kind of superhuman, but they have these human traits which bring them down. And so maybe a lot of what I'm doing is kind of the opposite. Like, you have these people who start out being really kind of down or being, you know, really human in a way, and then recognizing that some of the things that they do are really amazing. I mean, just living in this world is really amazing, and sort of the quotidian things people do are amazing, and recognizing that things we take for granted are pretty crazy. But I think in terms of storytelling, you know, an unlikely hero is someone who changes, you know, who does something that you didn't expect, who impresses you in a way. And you kind of, you know, maybe you do start with an initial impression that is less positive. But I think unpredictability is a big part of it. And, you know, seeing something that you didn't expect or that you haven't seen before. You know, another way to look at a likely hero is just to look at maybe thrillers, or to look at movies. You know, any movie where Tom Cruise is in it, he's a very likely hero. So no matter what happens in the first 20 minutes, you know he's not going to die. You wish he would die, but you know he won't die. And it's totally predictable how things will work out in that. And for a lot of people, that's satisfying. For other people, that's kind of boring.
Rock's got a new novel coming out this April called The Shelter Cycle, and I think that's going to have some unlikely heroes lurking around in it as well, as he recounts the stories of a small group of people in Montana who are members of a church preparing for the end of the world.
You know, Scott, I wanted to make sure we got a poet in on this conversation, because I think poets sometimes get really focused on particular figures who are also unlikely heroes. I talked to the poet Kayla Sargeson, author of Mini Love Gun, and she read to me from a series of poems written as letters to Nancy Spungen, wife of Sid Vicious, the famous bassist from the Sex Pistols. And if you know anything about Nancy Spungen, who the media often refers to as Nauseating Nancy, it's hard to imagine her as an inspiration, but for Sargeson, she really was. Here's a few excerpts from that series of poems.
Dear Nancy, I want the gun necklace, the one around your neck, and exhibit 181A in your mother's book. I want your punk-ass leather come-suck-me heels, so British accent, wrath of Sid, rampaging around London. I want your junkie, don't give a fuck if I die doing whatever, freedom. Let me tell you something. Sometimes I want to stab my therapist. She says everything's okay. It's not. You know that. You wanted to die when you were born. Umbilical cord, a noose around your neck. Dear Nancy, I've been writing to you because you're the opposite of the birth control in my purse. You know what it's like to be stoned for 10 days straight. I come home to you. You sit on the corner of my bed and never shut up. You forget the ghosts can't smoke cigarettes. On your birthday, I buy you pink tulips because no one ever buys you flowers. Tonight we are alone in a dark room, no Sid, your skin fresh-looking in the afterlife, your lips a red fireball. Dear Nancy, some days I don't love you. I'm sick of your heroin. I hate your Sid and your neediness. I want to know exactly what you want from me.
So Sargeson had a pretty wild conversation with Stacy about how and why Nancy Spungen took over her poetic consciousness and kind of became one of our unlikely heroes today.
And with Nancy, I felt like I would have wanted to be her friend. It was really hard not to romanticize her, you know, and to look up to her because she's really someone like you shouldn't look up to. But I'm generally pulled by darkness anyway, and that is one of the things that drew me to her. And she is a freak in a way that I can connect to. You know, I'm drawn to the people that society doesn't really want anything to do with because I think they're the ones I can learn from.
We want to thank all three of our writers today, Eugene Cross, Peter Rock, and Kayla Sargeson, for talking to us about how they've created or been inspired by the unlikeliest of heroes. Please buy their books and hang out with their characters.
And thanks also to Air Schooner correspondent Ryan Oberhelman for his great interview with Peter Rock.
Lastly, thanks to John Augustine and his bands Masses and Bus Gas for their eclectic music on this episode. Please look them up in your next Google search. And next week, Air Schooner's reading series continues with travel writer Stephanie Greist. Thanks for listening.
Look for Prairie Schooner at the upcoming AWP conference in Boston, March 6th to the 9th, 2013. Our staff members will appear on several panels, including a reading celebrating the 10-year anniversary of the Prairie Schooner Book Prize series. Head to our table to check out the new Prairie Schooner app for iPhone and iPads, or to pick up a free set of Air Schooner headphones. Save the date. Prairie Schooner is celebrating 10 years of its popular book prize series on April 4th. Come to the International Quilt Museum in Lincoln to hear Hilda Raz and Peggy Shoemaker, founders of the series, reminisce about the contest in its infancy. Plus, Susan Blackwell Ramsey and Karen Brown will read from their prize-winning books. Want to enjoy Prairie Schooner on an e-reader? Now you can. Visit Amazon.com to buy the current issue of Prairie Schooner for only $6.99.
Air Schooner is a bi-weekly product of Prairie Schooner and produced with research support from Eric Jones and Marianne Kunkel. Production assistants are Catherine Larson and Franny Sprowls. Technical support comes from Rick Alloway of the University of Nebraska-Lincoln's College of Journalism and Mass Communications. Air Schooner is produced by Scott Winter and the brainchild of executive producer Kwame Dawes.